Logic, Deductive and Inductive by Carveth Reed, M.A. Chapter 7, Immediate Inferences. Section 1. Under the general title of immediate inference, logicians discuss three subjects, namely opposition, conversion, and obversion, to which some writers add other forms, such as whole and part in connotation, contraposition, inversion, etc. Of opposition, again, all recognize four modes, subalternation, contradiction, contrariety, and subcontrariety. The only peculiarities of the exposition upon which we are now entering are that it follows the lead of the three laws of thought, taking first those modes of immediate inference in which identity is most important, then those which plainly involve contradiction and excluded middle, and that this method results in separating the modes of opposition, connecting subalternation with conversion, and the other modes with obversion. To make up for this departure from usage, the four modes of opposition will be brought together again in Section 9. Section 2. Subalternation. Opposition being the relation of propositions that have the same matter and differ only in form as A, E, I, O. Propositions of the forms A and I are said to be subalterns in relation to one another, and so are E and O, the universal of each quality being distinguished as subalternans, and the particular as subalternate. It follows from the principle of identity that the matter of the propositions being the same if A is true, I is true, and that if E is true, O is true. For A and E predicate something of all S or all men, and since I and O make the same predication of some S or some men, the sense of these particular propositions has already been predicated in A or E. If all S is P, some S is P. If no S is P, and some S is not P, or, if all men are fond of laughing, some men are. If no men are exempt from ridicule, some men are not. Similarly, if I is false, A is false. If O is false, E is false. We deny any predication about some S, we must deny it of all S, since in denying it of some, we have denied it of at least part of all, and whatever is false in one form of words is false in any other. On the other hand, if I is true, we do not know that A is, nor if O is true, that E is, for to infer from some to all would be going beyond the evidence. We shall see in discussing induction that the great problem of that part of logic is to determine the conditions under which we may in reality transcend this rule and infer from some to all, though even there it will appear that formally the rule is observed. For the present it is enough that I is an immediate inference from A and O from E, but that A is not an immediate inference from I nor E from O. Section 3. Connotative Subalternation. We have seen, Chapter 4, Section 6, that if the connotation of one term is only part of another's, its denotation is greater and includes that other's. Hence, genus and species stand in subaltern relation, and whatever is true of the genus is true of the species. If all animal life is dependent on vegetation, all human life is dependent on vegetation. On the other hand, whatever is not true of the species or narrower term cannot be true of the whole genus. If it is false that all human life is happy, it is false that all animal life is happy. Similar inferences may be drawn from the subaltern relation of predicates. Affirming the species, we affirm the genus. To take Mill's example, if Socrates is a man, Socrates is a living creature. On the other hand, denying the genus, we deny the species. If Socrates is not vicious, Socrates is not drunken. Such cases as these are recognized by Mill and Bain as immediate inferences under the principle of identity, but some logicians might treat them as imperfect syllogisms, requiring another premise to legitimate the conclusion. Thus, all animal life is dependent on vegetation. All human life is animal life. Therefore, all human life is dependent on vegetation. Or again, all men are living creatures. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is a living creature. The decision of this issue turns upon the question, confer Chapter 6, Section 3, how far a logician is entitled to assume that the terms he uses are understood and that the identities involved in their meanings will be recognized. And to this question, for the sake of consistency, one of two answers is required, failing which there remains the rule of thumb. First, it may be held that no terms are understood except those that are defined in expounding the science, such as genus and species, connotation and denotation. But very few logicians observe this limitation. Few would hesitate to substitute not wise for foolish. Yet, by what right? Malvolio being foolish, to prove that he is not wise, we may construct the following syllogism. Foolish is not wise. Malvolio is foolish. Therefore, Malvolio is not wise. Is this necessary? Why not? Secondly, it may be held that all terms may be assumed as understood unless a definition is challenged. This principle will justify the substitution of not wise for foolish, but it will also legitimate the above cases concerning human life and Socrates as immediate inferences with innumerable others that might be based upon the doctrine of relative terms. For example, the hunter missed his aim, therefore the prey escaped. And from this principle, it will further follow that all apparent syllogisms having one premise of verbal proposition are immediate inferences. Confer Chapter 9, Section 4. Closely connected with such cases as the above are those mentioned by Archbishop Thompson as immediate inferences by added determinants. Laws of Thought, Section 87. He takes his case. A Negro is a fellow creature. Therefore, a Negro in suffering is a fellow creature in suffering. This rests upon the principle that to increase the connotations of two terms by the same attribute or determinant does not affect the relationship of their denotations, since it must equally diminish, if at all, the denotations of both classes by excluding the same individuals, if any want the given attribute. But this principle is true only when the added attribute is not merely the same verbally, but has the same significance in qualifying both terms. We cannot argue a mouse is an animal, therefore a large mouse is a large animal, for large is an attribute relative to the normal magnitude of the thing described. Section 4. Conversion is immediate inference by transposing the terms of a given proposition without altering its quality. If the quantity is also unaltered, the inference is called simple conversion. But if the quantity is changed from universal to particular, it is called conversion by limitation, or per accidens. The given proposition is called the convertend, that which is derived from it, the converse. Departing from the usual order of exposition, I have taken up conversion next to subalternation because it is generally thought to rest upon the principle of identity, and because it seems to be a good method to exhaust the forms that come only under identity before going on to those that involve contradiction and excluded middle. Some, indeed, dispute the claims of conversion to illustrate the principle of identity, and if the sufficient statement of that principle be A is A, it may be a question how conversion or any other mode of inference can be referred to it. But if we state it as above, Chapter 6, Section 3, that whatever is true in one form of words is true in any other, there is no difficulty in applying it to conversion. Thus, to take the simple conversion of I. Some S is P, therefore some P is S. Some poets are businesslike. Therefore, some businesslike men are poets. Here, the convertend and the converse say the same thing, and this is true if that is. We have, then, two cases of simple conversion, of I, as above, and of E. For E, no S is P, therefore no P is S. No ruminants are carnivores, therefore no carnivores are ruminants. In converting I, the predicate P, when taken as the new subject, being pre-indesignate, is treated as particular, and in converting E, the predicate P, when taken as the new subject, is treated as universal, according to the rule in Chapter 5, Section 1. A is the one case of conversion by limitation. All S is P, therefore some P is S. All cats are gray in the dark, therefore some things gray in the dark are cats. The predicate is treated as particular when taking it for the new subject, according to the rule not to go beyond the evidence. To infer that all things gray in the dark are cats would be palpably absurd. Yet no error of reasoning is commoner than the simple conversion of A. The validity of conversion by limitation may be shown thus. If all S is P, then by subalternation some S is P, and therefore by simple conversion some P is S. O cannot be truly converted. If we take the proposition some S is not P to convert this into no P is S, or some P is not S, would break the rule in Chapter 6, Section 6, since S, undistributed in the convertend, would be distributed in the converse. If we are told that some men are not cooks, we cannot infer that some cooks are not men. This would be to assume that some men are identical with all men. By quantifying the predicate, indeed, we may convert O simply thus. Some men are not cooks, therefore no cooks are some men. And the same plan has some advantage in converting A, for by the usual method, per accidens, the converse of A being I, if we convert this again, it is still I, and therefore means less than our original convertend. Thus, all S is P, therefore some P is S, therefore some S is P. Such knowledge as that all S, the whole of it, is P, is too precious a thing to be squandered in pure logic, and it may be preserved by quantifying the predicate. For if we convert A to Y, thus, all S is P, therefore some P is all S, we may reconvert Y to A, without any loss of meaning. It is the chief use of quantifying the predicate that thereby every proposition is capable of simple conversion. The conversion of propositions in which the relation of terms is inadequately expressed, see Chapter 2, Section 2, by the ordinary copula, is or is not, needs a special rule. To argue thus, A is followed by B, therefore something followed by B is A, would be clumsy formalism. We usually say, and we ought to say, A is followed by B, therefore B follows A, or is preceded by A. Now, any relation between two terms may be viewed from either side. A is to B, or B is to A. It is in both cases the same fact, but with the altered point of view, it may present a different character. For example, in the immediate inference, A is greater than B, therefore B is less than A, a diminishing turns into an increasing ratio, whilst the fact predicated remains the same. Given, then, a relation between two terms as viewed from one to the other, the same relation viewed from the other to the one may be called the reciprocal. In the cases of equality, coexistence, and simultaneity, the given relation and its reciprocal are not only the same fact, but they also have the same character. In the cases of greater and less and sequence, the character alters. We may then state the following rule for the conversion of propositions in which the whole relation explicitly stated is taken as the copula. Transpose the terms, and for the given relation substitute its reciprocal. Thus, A is the cause of B, therefore B is the effect of A. The rule assumes that the reciprocal of a given relation is definitely known, and so far as this is true, it may be extended to more concrete relations. A is a genus of B, therefore B is a species of A. A is the father of B, therefore B is a child of A. But not every relational expression has only one definite reciprocal. If we are told that A is the brother of B, we can only infer that B is either the brother or the sister of A. A list of all reciprocal relations is a desideratum of logic. Section 5. Aversion, otherwise called permutation or equipollence, is immediate inference by changing the quality of the given proposition and substituting for its predicate the contradictory term. The given proposition is called the obvertend, and the inference from it the obverse. Thus, the obvertend being some philosophers are consistent reasoners, the obverse will be some philosophers are not inconsistent reasoners. The legitimacy of this mode of reasoning follows in the case of affirmative propositions from the principle of contradiction that if any term be affirmed of a subject, the contradictory term may be denied. Chapter 6, Section 3. To avert affirmative propositions, then, the rule is insert the negative sign, and for the predicate substitute, its contradictory term. A. All S is P. Therefore, no S is not negative P. All men are fallible, therefore no men are infallible. I. Some S is P, therefore some S is not negative P. Some philosophers are consistent, therefore some philosophers are not inconsistent. In agreement with this mode of inference, we have the rule of modern English grammar that two negatives make an affirmative. Again, by the principle of excluded middle, if any term be denied of a subject, its contradictory may be affirmed to avert negative propositions. Then the rule is, remove the negative sign, and for the predicate, substitute its contradictory term. E. No S is P, therefore all S is not negative P. No matter is destructible, therefore all matter is indestructible. O. Some S is not P, therefore some S is not negative P. Some ideals are not attainable, therefore some ideals are unattainable. Thus, by aversion, each of the four propositions retains its quantity but changes its quality. A to E, I to O, E to A, O to I. And all the obverses are infinite propositions, the affirmative infinites having the sense of negatives, and the negative infinites having the sense of affirmatives. Again, having obtained the obverse of a given proposition, it may be desirable to recover the obvertend, or it may at any time be requisite to change a given infinite proposition into the corresponding direct affirmative or negative, and in such cases the process is still aversion. Thus, if no S is not negative P, be given us to recover the obvertend or to find the corresponding affirmative, the proposition being formally negative, we apply the rule for averting negatives. Remove the negative sign, and for the predicate, substitute its contradictory. This yields the affirmative, all S is P. Similarly, to obtain the obvertend of all S is not negative P, apply the rule for averting affirmatives, and this yields no S is P. Section 6. Contrariety. We have seen in Chapter 4, Section 8, that contrary terms are such that no two of them are predicable in the same way of the same subject, whilst perhaps neither may be predicable of it. Similarly, contrary propositions may be defined as those of which no two are ever both true together, whilst perhaps neither may be true, or in other words, both may be false. This is the relation between A and E when concerned with the same matter, as A, all men are wise, E, no men are wise. Such propositions cannot both be true, but they may both be false, for some men may be wise and some not. They cannot both be true, for by the principle of contradiction, if wise may be affirmed of all men, not wise must be denied, but all men are not wise is the obverse of no men are wise, which therefore may also be denied. At the same time, we cannot apply to A and E the principle of excluded middle, so as to show that one of them must be true of the same matter. For if we deny that all men are wise, we do not necessarily deny the attribute wise of each and every man. To say that not all are wise may mean no more than that, some are not. This gives a proposition in the form of O, which, as we have seen, does not imply its subalternance, E. If, however, two singular propositions having the same matter but differing in quality are to be treated as universals and therefore as A and E, they are nevertheless contradictory and not merely contrary, for one of them must be false and the other true. Section 7. Contradiction is a relation between two propositions analogous to that between contradictory terms, one of which being affirmed of a subject the other is denied, such, namely, that one of them is false and the other true. This is the case with the forms A and O and E and I. In the same matter, if it be true that all men are wise, it is false that some men are not wise, equivalent by aversion to some men are not wise, or else, since the some men are included in the all men, we should be predicating of the same men that they are both wise and not wise, which would violate the principle of contradiction. Similarly, no men are wise, being by aversion equivalent to all men are not wise, is incompatible with some men are wise by the same principle of contradiction. But again, if it be false that all men are wise, it is also true that some are not wise, for though in denying that wise is a predicate of all men, we do not deny it of each and every man, yet we deny it of some men. Of some men, therefore, by the principle of excluded middle, not wise is to be affirmed, and some men are not wise is by aversion equivalent to some men are not wise. Similarly, if it be false that no men are wise, which by aversion is equivalent to all men are not wise, then it is true at least that some men are wise. By extending and enforcing the doctrine of relative terms, certain other inferences are implied in the contrary and contradictory relations of propositions. We have seen in Chapter 4 that the contradictory of a given term includes all its contraries. Not blue, for example, includes red and yellow. Hence, since the sky is blue, becomes by aversion, the sky is not not blue. We may also infer the sky is not red, etc. From the truth, then, of any proposition predicating a given term, we may infer the falsity of all propositions predicating the contrary terms in the same relation. But on the other hand, from the falsity of a proposition predicating a given term, we cannot infer the truth of the predication of any particular contrary term. If it be false that the sky is red, we cannot formally infer that the sky is blue. Confer Chapter 4, Section 8. Section 8. Subcontrariety is the relation of two propositions concerning the same matter that may both be true but are never both false. This is the case with I and O. If it be true that some men are wise, it may also be true that some other men are not wise. This follows from the maxim in Chapter 6, Section 6, not to go beyond the evidence. For if it be true that some men are wise, it may indeed be true that all are, this being the subalternans. And if all are, it is, by contradiction, false that some are not. But as we are only told that some men are, it is illicit to infer the falsity of some are not, which could only be justified by evidence concerning all men. But if it be false that some men are wise, it is true that some men are not wise, for by contradiction, if some men are wise is false, no men are wise is true, and therefore, by subalternation, some men are not wise is true. Section 9. The Square of Opposition. By their relations of subalternation, contrariety, contradiction, and subcontrariety, the forms A, I, E, O, having the same matter, are said to stand in opposition, and logicians represent these relations by a square having A, I, E, O at its corners. A contraries E, I subcontraries O. As an aid to the memory, this diagram is useful, but as an attempt to represent the logical relations of propositions, it is misleading, for standing at corners of the same square, A and E, A and I, E and O, and I and O, seem to be couples bearing the same relation to one another, whereas we have seen that their relations are entirely different. The following traditional summary of their relations in respect of truth and falsity is much more to the purpose. 1. If A is true, I is true. E is false, O is false. 2. If A is false, I is unknown. E is unknown, O is true. 3. If I is true, A is unknown, E is false, O is unknown. 4. If I is false, A is false, E is true, O is true. 5. If E is true, A is false, I is false, O is true. 6. If E is false, A is unknown, I is true, O is unknown. 7. If O is true, A is false, I is unknown, E is unknown. 8. If O is false, A is true, I is true, E is false. Where, however, as in cases 2, 3, 6, 7, alleging either the falsity of universals or the truth of particulars, it follows that two of the three opposites are unknown. We may conclude further that one of them must be true and the other false, because the two unknown are always contradictories. Section 10. Secondary modes of immediate inference are obtained by implying the process of conversion or aversion to the results already obtained by the other process. The best known secondary form of immediate inference is the contrapositive, and this is the converse of the obverse of a given proposition. Thus, datum, obverse, contrapositive. A. All S is P, therefore no S is not negative P, therefore no not negative P is S. I. Some S is P, therefore some S is not not negative P, therefore none. E. No S is P, therefore all S is not negative P, therefore some not negative P is S. O. Some S is not P, therefore some S is not negative P, therefore some not negative P is S. There is no contrapositive of I, because the obverse of I is in the form of O, and we have seen that O cannot be converted. O, however, has a contrapositive, some not negative P is S. And this is sometimes given instead of the converse and called the converse by negation. Contraposition needs no justification by the laws of thought, as it is nothing but a compounding of conversion with aversion, both of which processes have already been justified. I give a table opposite of the other ways of compounding these primary modes of immediate inference. Note to listeners, a table is provided in the text available on the FCIT website. In this table, lowercase a and lowercase b stand for not negative capital A and not negative capital B, and had better be read thus, for no capital A is lowercase b, no capital A is not negative capital B, for all lowercase b is a column 6, all not negative capital B is not negative capital A, and so on. It may not at first be obvious why the process of alternately averting and converting any proposition should ever come to an end, though it will, no doubt, be considered a very fortunate circumstance that it always does end. On examining the results, it will be found that the cause of its ending is the inconvertibility of O for E. When averted, becomes A. Every A, when converted, degenerates into I. Every I, when averted, becomes O. O cannot be converted, and to avert it again is merely to restore the former proposition, so that the whole process moves on to inevitable dissolution. I and O are exhausted by 3 transformations, whilst A and E will each endure 7. Except aversion, conversion, and contraposition, it has not been usual to bestow special names on these processes or their results. But the form in columns 7 and 10, some lowercase a is capital B, some lowercase a is not capital B, where the original predicate is affirmed or denied of the contradictory of the original subject, has been thought by Dr. Keynes to deserve a distinctive title, and he has called it the inverse. Whilst the inverse is one form, however, inversion is not one process, but is obtained by different processes from E and A, respectively. In this, it differs from aversion, conversion, and contraposition, each of which stands for one process. The inverse form has been objected to on the ground that the inference, all A is B, therefore some not negative A is not B, distributes B as predicate of a negative proposition, though it was given as undistributed as predicate of an affirmative proposition. But Dr. Keynes defends it on the ground that 1. It is obtained by aversions and conversions, which are all legitimate, and 2. That although all A is B does not distribute B in relation to A, it does distribute B in relation to some not negative A, namely in relation to whatever not negative A is not negative B. This is one reason why, in stating the rule in Chapter 6, Section 6, I have written, an immediate inference ought to contain nothing that is not contained or formally implied in the proposition from which it is inferred, and have maintained that every term formally implies its contradictory within the suppositio. Section 11. Immediate inferences from conditionals are those which consist 1. In changing a disjunctive into a hypothetical, or a hypothetical into a disjunctive, or either into a categorical, and 2. In the relations of opposition and the equivalences of aversion, conversion, and secondary or compound processes, which we have already examined in respect of categoricals, as no new principles are involved, it may suffice to exhibit some of the results. We have already seen, Chapter 5, Section 4, how disjunctives may be read as hypotheticals and hypotheticals as categoricals, And as to opposition, if we recognize four forms of hypothetical A, I, E, O, these plainly stand to one another in a square of opposition just as categoricals do. Thus, A and E, if A is B, C is D, and if A is B, C is not D, are contraries but not contradictories, since both may be false. C may sometimes be D and sometimes not, though they cannot both be true. And if they are both false, their subalternates are both true, being respectively the contradictories of the universals of opposite quality, namely I of E and O of A. But in the case of disjunctives, we cannot set out a satisfactory square of opposition, because, as we saw, Chapter 5, Section 4, the forms required for E and O are not true disjunctives, but exponables. The obverse, converse, and contrapositive of hypotheticals, admitting the distinction of quality, may be exhibited thus. Note to listeners, a table is provided in the text available on the FCIT website. As to disjunctives, the attempt to put them through these different forms immediately destroys their disjunctive character. Still, given any proposition in the form A is either B or C, we can state the propositions that give the sense of aversion, conversion, etc. thus, datum, A is either B or C. Obverse, A is not both lowercase b and lowercase c. Converse, something either B or C is A. Contrapositive, nothing that is both lowercase b and lowercase c is A. For a disjunctive in I, of course, there is no contrapositive. Given a disjunctive in the form either A is B or C is D, we may write for its obverse, in no case is capital A lowercase b and capital C at the same time lowercase d. But no converse or contrapositive of such a disjunctive can be obtained except by first casting it into the hypothetical or categorical form. The reader who wishes to pursue this subject further will find it elaborately treated in Dr. Keene's Formal Logic, Part 2, to which work the above chapter is indebted. End of chapter. Read by Lorraine Montgomery for Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.